From Ground Zero Radio, this is Democracy Now in Exile. Israel invades another West Bank town, shells a hospital, and kills 10 people overnight. As U.S. officials criticize the CNN of the Arab world, Al Jazeera, we'll look at who the CNN of the Western world chooses as its terrorism experts, including a former Aryan Nations member convicted of possession of freeze-dried bubonic plague. The problem is he's not identified as a former member of the Aryan Nations, simply as an expert. Then Bangladeshi sweatshop workers say labor conditions in their country have worsened with the attacks of September 11th. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now in Exile. This is the War and Peace Report, broadcasting just blocks from where the towers of the World Trade Center once stood and where the fire still burns. I'm Amy Goodman. A Pakistani militant group confirmed today that 22 of its fighters were killed in a U.S. attack on Kabul, the deadliest known strike against a group linked to Osama bin Laden since the U.S. began bombing Afghanistan October 7th. U.S. jets and bombers continue to launch heavy attacks against the Afghan capital with huge explosions in the direction of the Taliban military sites on the outskirts. The Pentagon has acknowledged that U.S. jets bombed a military hospital on the outskirts of the western Afghan city of Herat, this after the United Nations offered independent confirmation of the bombing. A UN spokeswoman told a news conference in Pakistan that the 100-bed hospital was struck on Sunday during a U.S. air raid. Afghanistan's ruling Taliban claims that 100 patients and medical workers were killed at the hospital. The U.S. has previously denied hitting the hospital and that the Pentagon has bought the exclusive rights to commercial satellite imagery that might have enabled reporters to independently confirm the reports. And a new poll by the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press shows that U.S. citizens, by a 2-to-1 margin, say the best way to avoid terrorism is for the United States to get more involved in helping solve international problems. Israeli troops invaded the West Bank village of Beit Rima near Ramallah today as President Bush backed off from earlier demands that Israel immediately and permanently end its invasion and military occupation of Palestinian self-rule towns in the West Bank. Israeli troops killed 10 Palestinians overnight, according to Israeli radio. Palestinian witnesses said the army opened fire without provocation, shelling a hospital, among other buildings. In Bethlehem, Archbishop Pietro Sambi from the Vatican and several bishops led thousands of Palestinians on a march to Manger Square and the Church of the Nativity, chanting, "Sharon, Sharon, hear, hear, Bethlehem is an Arab city." The latest deaths brought to 38 the number of Palestinians killed since the Israeli military offensive in the West Bank was launched on October 18th. No Israelis have died. The House yesterday rushed through a bill authorizing the Treasury Department to issue war bonds to the public to help pay for U.S. military action and federal aid to Manhattan. The measure passed unanimously with only a handful of members on the floor after a parade of speakers in both parties said the legislation gives ordinary citizens a way to express their patriotism and get involved in the fight on terrorism. The Senate last month approved a similar measure as part of a bill funding the Treasury Department. Holy Cross Hospital in Washington, D.C. is now treating 5 D.C. postal workers for possible inhalation anthrax. The hospital says 2 more people with flu-like symptoms were admitted overnight. 2 postal workers, Joseph Kersine and Thomas Morris, died of what officials say was inhalation anthrax on Monday. Federal officials finally acknowledged yesterday they'd underestimated the danger that anthrax-contaminated letters pose to those who carry and sort the mail. Federal investigators still have no firm idea who is sending envelopes of the deadly microbe through the mail or what is motivating the attacks, according to lawmakers, public health experts, and law enforcement officials. Although they continue to operate under the assumption that there might be a link to the September 11th attacks, investigators from the FBI, the U.S. Postal Service, and other agencies told the Washington Post that the mailings do not have the earmarks of a foreign terrorist operation and seem more likely to have come from a domestic source. For the first time in 3 decades of resistance to British rule in Northern Ireland, the Irish Republican Army says it has disposed of some of its weapons, a move widely hailed as a major breakthrough for the deadlock peace process in the occupied country. The leader of the main pro-British party in Northern Ireland, David Trimble, said the move would likely revive the 1998 Good Friday power-sharing agreement between Catholics and Protestants, which had all but broken down in recent months over Protestant claims that the IRA had not been disarming. A U.S. military advisory team will visit a southern Philippine island of Basilan, a stronghold of guerrillas the Philippines government claims is linked to Osama bin Laden. 5 U.S. officers arrived in Zamboanga on Tuesday, and another 20 or so will arrive on Friday to provide advice and equipment in the battle against the Abu Sayyaf guerrillas. Philippine special forces, trained and equipped by the U.S. military, have killed at least 50 people in Basilan and the nearby island of Jolo, whom they say are guerrillas. The Abu Sayyaf guerrillas say they are fighting for an independent Muslim homeland in the south of the predominantly Catholic country, but Philippine officials say the group pursues kidnap for ransom as its main activity. And finally, the pharmaceutical giant Bayer, the maker of the drug Cipro, says it has reached tentative agreement with the U.S. government to significantly lower the drug's price. Officials with Secretary of Health and Human Services Tommy Thompson said the agreement could lower the price of Cipro to under $1 per tablet compared to the current retail price of $4 or $5 per pill. The Bush administration has repeatedly refused to consider allowing other drug manufacturers to make cheaper generic equivalents of Cipro.
Oh, I am just a young man with my task ahead of me. Fan the flames of freedom and reclaim history. Open up the doors to equal opportunity to hold the whole world in our hands, proclaiming jubilee.
Proclaiming Jubilee, Stephen Smith here on the War and Peace Report. This is Resistance Radio. I'm Amy Goodman. So the other day, I'm watching television, CNN, and I see a man talking about bioterrorism. And the little logo goes up underneath, you know, CNN, the new war, America's new war. And it says Larry Wayne Harris. He's a microbiologist. And he starts talking about things like bubonic plague and other things, one of the many experts on CNN. But I feel like I'm having some kind of flashback to a few years ago when I believe there was a man who was arrested for bubonic plague who was a member of the Aryan Nations. But they are not identifying him as such. He is simply being identified as an expert. And we do a little research and come up with a piece by Mary Beth Lane in Columbus, Ohio, called The Columbus Dispatch. She just did this. I gave her a call and asked her about this CNN guest. Why don't you tell us who is Larry Wayne Harris?
Okay. Well, Larry Wayne Harris is a microbiologist living in Lancaster, Ohio, a suburb of Columbus. He is also a former member of the Aryan Nations. And he has been regarded over the years by the federal government as a dangerous man because of his ties to white supremacist organizations and other anti-government groups.
Can you tell us his connection to anthrax?
Well, you know, back in 1997, he was arrested, wound up being convicted of wire fraud for illegally possessing 3 vials of freeze-dried bubonic plague germs. And then afterward, he was put on probation for that. But then the next year, in 1998, he was involved in an anthrax scare out in Las Vegas. And federal authorities arrested him and another man. But it turned out when Army scientists conducted some tests on this substance the men were carrying, it turned out to be anthrax vaccine and not the deadly anthrax itself. And so the charges were dropped in that incident. Larry Wayne Harris himself says that he has experimented over the years with different germs because he wants to develop antibodies. And so he says his experiments are done from a defensive standpoint and not offensive. Even so, as I say, the federal government does regard him as a dangerous individual, and authorities do keep an eye on him locally.
On CNN, he is not identified as a former member of the Aryan Nations or someone who has been found guilty of wire fraud or after illegally obtaining 3 vials of freeze-dried bubonic plague germs. They simply talk about him as a bioterrorism expert.
I don't know to what extent he is an expert. I know he says he's studied all this on his own, and he does have a self-published book that he sells on the internet, and he has a so-called decontamination kit that he sells on the internet. But even so, as I say, the federal government does regard him as dangerous because he does have these ties to the Aryan Nations. He says he's a former member of the Aryan Nations. He says he has disavowed violence. But even so, actually, I have interviewed Larry Wayne Harris now several times. Not all to do with germ warfare, but primarily to do with the individuals that he still knows and associates with in the Aryan Nations. I recently did a couple of stories about individuals here in Ohio who are leaders, one of whom has recently been named the national leader of the Aryan Nations. And these are people that Larry Wayne Harris knows very well. And so I've turned to him to interview him about these men who are the leaders in the Aryan Nations. And so he certainly does seem to have familiarity with the group, even if he is a former member. So that's his other identity and not just his experimenting with germs.
Who is the new head of the Aryan Nations?
He is a fellow from Ohio. He's from the Dayton area. His name is Harold Ray Redfearn. And we've done a couple of stories about this man recently because, as I say, he was named the national leader of Aryan Nations. And authorities both here, law enforcement authorities here in Ohio and elsewhere, as well as watchdog groups such as the Southern Anti-Poverty Law Center, viewed this with some concern, the naming of this man to be the new national leader. What would that mean? Did that mean, new activity by the group? Where would he locate his headquarters and so forth? And so anyway, that's Harold Ray Redfearn, the new national leader of the Aryan Nations, with a presence in Ohio. And he says he's setting up his national headquarters in central Pennsylvania.
You have a final quote in your piece on Larry Wayne Harris, where he says, "We've been at war with the Muslim world since 1948 with the formation of Israel. The weapons they've used have become more and more sophisticated." So he is pointing the finger at Arabs. Has there been any discussion in your newspaper, or have you had any conversations with him about the possibility that these anthrax attacks and hoaxes could come from within, right here, perhaps one of the groups he's associated with?
In my discussion with him, my interview with him most recently, he specifically pointed to Arab groups. Now, I don't know that he has any specific knowledge of this. I think I sensed he was giving an opinion more than anything else. Although having said that, he did go on to say that American anti-government groups, the militia types, that sort of thing, share a common enemy with the Arab groups. And his remarks about America's tensions with the Arab world, you know, stemming back to the formation of Israel, those remarks are very much in keeping, I might add, with other things he has said that are part of the philosophy, if you will, of the Aryan Nations hate group.
So, in summary, the drugs that he has gotten a hold of, that is the reason the federal government is watching him, are...
The reason that they're watching him is that back in 1977, he did, in fact, obtain illegally freeze-dried vials of bubonic plague germs. And so he was put on he was convicted and put on probation for that. The following year, then, in 1998, he was arrested in an anthrax scare out in Las Vegas. But it turned out, after Army scientists ran some tests, it turned out he was carrying anthrax vaccine and not deadly anthrax itself. And so charges against him were dropped in that incident.
This is the author of the piece in the Columbus Dispatch, Mary Beth Lane, writing about Larry Wayne Harris. Again, while he has appeared on CNN numerous times, they have not talked about him being a former member of the white supremacist group, the Aryan Nation, although at least in the time that I saw him on CNN. And today we're going to take a look at CNN's list of terrorism experts. We're going to look at Henry Kissinger, Oliver North, Richard Helms, and we're going to speak with Larry Wayne Harris himself. A news story from the Foreign Desk of the New York Times from October 9th reads, in an unconventional war in which propaganda is an essential weapon, an Arab-language satellite television channel is striking with relentless power. Only hours after the first American bombs and missiles dropped in Afghanistan, the channel, Al Jazeera, broadcast a videotape of Osama bin Laden, America's ultimate target. Since it began broadcasting 5 years ago, Al Jazeera has become the Arab world's CNN, with round-the-clock all-news public affairs programs that reach millions of viewers in scores of countries from its base in the tiny Persian Gulf Emirate of Qatar. But American policymakers have been troubled by Al Jazeera's frequent broadcasts of its exclusive December 98 interview with Mr. bin Laden, and by the anti-American oratory of many of its analysts and guests, and from callers on freewheeling phone-in shows. Al Jazeera's relentless coverage of rioting in the occupied territories from its bureaus in Ramallah, Gaza City, and rented studio in Jerusalem have kept the Palestinian cause front and center in living rooms throughout the Muslim world. Over and over last year, it played the video of a young Palestinian boy and his father cowering on the side of a building moments before the boy was killed by Israeli troops. That's an excerpt of a piece in the New York Times. Well, while focusing overwhelmingly on the CNN of the Arab world, commentators have failed to subject the CNN of the Western world to the same kind of scrutiny. Today on the War and Peace Report, we're going to take a look at some of the people CNN turns to for expert analysis. One of those people is Larry Wayne Smith, and he joins us on the telephone right now. We're also joined by Chip Berlay with Political Research Associates and author of Right Wing Populism in America. Larry Wayne Harris, welcome to Democracy Now! in Exile.
Thank you very much for having me on this
morning. It's good to have you with us. How many times have you been on CNN?
Oh, about 13 times.
And you're talking about how easy it is to get biological weapons in this country.
Absolutely. Now, you know, the thing about it is, with biological weapons is as big as nature itself. You know what I'm saying? It's as big as nature itself. Because right now, there's 48 laboratories in the world that will sell anthrax, bubonic plague, cholera, typhoid, brucellosis, tularema, to anybody that's got the money. As a matter of fact, you can go to Mexico City, just across the border of Mexico, and there is zero restrictions on it. They have several laboratories down there. Repositories that you can just walk in, and again, there's no restrictions whatsoever. Matter of fact, it is easier to get anthrax than it is Tylenol with codeine.
Now, what have you yourself been able to procure?
Basically, several years ago, I was doing research. When I wrote my book, Bacteriological Warfare, A Major Threat to North America, I'm a registered microbiologist, and so I needed to run MICs minimum inhibitory concentrations and also MBC, minimum bactericidal concentrations, and using various agricultural antibiotics that people can acquire without a prescription to the feed and grain store. And I ordered 3 vials of avirulent Yersinia pestis, which is the non-virulent form of bubonic plague.
Have you also gotten anthrax?
As far as the vaccine, I use Vaccinia vaccine. As a matter of fact, and by the way, even right now, that is totally unrestricted, the vaccine, which is totally avirulent. The only way that you can hurt somebody with that, if you made a 55-gallon drum of it and dropped it on your foot. I mean, literally. I've always been a very cautious microbiologist and very concerned about anybody getting infected. As a matter of fact, when I was working with clinical specimens, any clinical specimen that come in that I suspected was could be a dangerous pathogen, I was always using laminar flow hoods and everything of this nature. Or especially we're working with tularema, because you know if you're not very careful with that stuff, you'll get it all over your, all over the laboratory, everywhere. So I've always tried to practice a very conscious microbiology.
Larry Wayne Harris, we have to break for stations to identify themselves. We come back. We'll also be joined by Chip Berlay as we continue to discuss the issue of how easy it is to get biological weapons in this country. Stay with us.
Did I drink some poison?
Did I drink some poison?
That I don't remember now.
That I don't remember now. Is the blood on my hands? No, my hands are clean. Did I do something in another lifetime that was really, really me?
Yeah, I'm hearing voices. Am I losing my mind? Think I'm going crazy, gotta get out.
Running into the street, start to shout. Get out of my way, get out, get out. Did I drink some poison? That I don't remember now. Is the blood on my hand?
Welcome to Democracy Now in Exile, back to the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman as we continue with Larry Wayne Harris, a microbiologist who has been able to easily obtain various biological warfare like freeze-dried bubonic plague. Now, you pled guilty to wire fraud after illegally obtaining the 3 vials of this stuff?
Well, I got caught up on a technicality. And, of course, the technicality that I got caught up of, yes, I was guilty as far as the technicality goes. But as far as owning the vial, obtaining the vials and stuff of this nature, there was nothing illegal about doing it. As a matter of fact, the vials that I acquired then, there is right now, because they're avirulent strains, there's no restriction on obtaining them now. Same thing with the Vaccinia strain.
Now, you're a former member of the Aryan Nations?
Born into it.
What do you mean?
My great-grandfather was in England in 1855 when he attended a meeting there, which is called British Israelism, and through the years, my great-grandfather was into it when it became known as Kingdom Identity. And again, I didn't wake up one morning and decide I'm going to go out and join the Aryan Nation. I was born into it, raised into it.
Are you still a member?
There is no Aryan Nation anymore.
What about groups like yours, the Aryan Nations, being able to get this kind of biological warfare, and how much is being stashed in this country by these groups?
First off, of all of the people that I've ever known, my procedure was, and I've told people this before, if I ever suspected anybody was trying to get a biological weapon, I would personally turn them into the FBI, because right now there's no point. Many of the groups in the United States have now been linking up with the Muslim groups, and the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and they see a common enemy, and there's no point for American patriots to start getting or acquiring biological weapons when the Muslims have got factories, they've got the laboratories, they've got all the facilities to manufacture it and bring it in and release it. I mean, there is absolutely no point. It's like somebody going down trying to kick a hole in the side of the Titanic after she kicked hit the iceberg. There's no point. All you have to do is train people how to defend against it. And once, again, just by sheer numbers, when people learn how to defend against it, you know that Muslims have got the laboratories, they've got the equipment, they got the agents, they got everything necessary to release the agents. And just like we are now helping the Northern Alliance, again, the Taliban, many of the Muslims have linked up with American Patriot groups and to help them against the what they consider to be an occupational government.
We're also joined on the telephone by Chip Berlay, who is with Political Research Associates in Cambridge, Mass. In looking at right-wing populism in this country and groups like Aryan Nations, Chip Berlay, what about this issue of the possibility of them having biological warfare? I should say in the news headlines we read today in a Washington Post piece that the Washington Post in interviews with FBI, U.S. Postal Service, and other agencies said the mailings don't have the earmarks of a foreign terrorist operation and seem more likely to have come from a domestic source.
Well, I don't think anybody knows where they're coming from, and I think all the speculation is a lot of hot air. There's at least 9 different suspect groups, including the Osama bin Laden networks or other Muslim Arab terrorists. It could be agents of an anti-U.S. government doing this as a what's called a false flag operation and using this as cover. It could be people in the extreme right, like Aryan Nations, which is still around, thank you very much. Could be people in the Patriot Militia Movement, the more militant people. It could be crazy people. Nobody knows. But what I think is really interesting here is to point out what's going on with Mr. Harris. And he talks about the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And, of course, in Christian identity, most Christian identity believers think Jews are the spawn of Satan. Isn't that right, Mr. Harris?
Some of the people may consider that. Not everybody.
So don't you think folks might be a little nervous that someone who hangs out with folks who think that people of color are mud people and Jews are the spawn of Satan and should be exterminated, that you like sort of mess around with toxins? Don't you think like the average person might be a little nervous about that?
Again, I've always had an open door policy here with the FBI. They've stopped by a few times. They see that everything that we do here, there is absolutely nothing that would harm anyone and stuff of this nature. And again, there's no point. There's absolutely no point to develop biological weapons for the patriot groups in this country to develop biological weapons, because we know that the Muslims are developing the biological weapons and they got the infrastructure to deliver the biological weapons. And the only thing that we have to do is train the people how to defend against the biological weapons. And again, the end is the same. The means and end is the same.
We're talking to Larry Wayne Harris, who has been able to get biological weapons, also a former member of the Aryan Nations, and Chip Berlay, who writes about right-wing groups in this country. Mr. Harris, have you read Jim Ridgway's piece in the Village Voice?
No, I have not.
Well, he writes this piece, actually, about you, talks about an American microbiologist who was captured by the FBI in Ohio during the late 90s with vials of bacterium that causes the bubonic plague. He also told a major magazine he had recovered anthrax. Now, he goes on to speculate and says that speculation about the recent anthrax scare centers on Muslim extremists, but white supremacists cannot be ignored, especially as abortion clinics around the country report receiving letters containing suspicious powder. Some of these letters reference domestic terrorists like the Army of God. Have you had dealings with the Army of God?
I haven't even heard of them. Yeah, you mentioned it.
The group that deals with...
Like I said, I've never even heard it until you just mentioned it.
Could I explain a few things here?
Yes, go ahead, Chip.
Okay. The Ridgway article was really pretty bad. I'm not a big fan of Mr. Harris. I'm really his political opponent. But the Ridgway article neglected to mention that many of the charges that were hyped in the article were dismissed. So let's start with the fact that Mr. Harris, in my view, is neither an appropriate expert on terrorism and chemical biological warfare, but neither is he a poster boy for claims that the U.S. political right is behind the current wave of anthrax attacks. It's just this was a hype article, and it misrepresented Mr. Harris, and that's difficult to do because he's a pretty scary person from my point of view. The Army of God is part of a militant wing of the Christian right with some overlap with the militias, but it's largely a tiny militant anti-abortion sector of the Christian right, not the militias. The militias are not part of the extreme right, which includes Aryan Nations. And what's happening here, which has tremendous repercussions in civil liberties, is lumping together the Christian right, the Patriot militia movement, and the extreme right as somehow one big scary group of people out to kill us with toxins. And as much as I think it's possible that right-wing groups are involved in these anthrax attacks, and they're certainly involved in the hoaxes, and the hoax letters sent to Planned Parenthood are sent by the Army of God, but there's a lot of really bad reporting going on.
Yes, like I said, if you've read my book, Bacteriological Warfare, A Major Threat to North America, you'll find that my book is a civil defense manual. It is a manual that tells people how to defend, again, biological weapons. It identifies biological weapons, and everyone that has ever read the book says flat out that, again, some people try to say it's a manual for germ warfare, and after people read it, they said, whoever's saying it's crazy.
No, I think you could read it that way. And, Mr. Harris, having you on as a biological terrorism expert is like having David Duke on as an expert on race relations.
Well, like I said, again, my expertise is in basically in how to defend against germ warfare. That is my expertise, how is in defense. I have never operated in offense. Matter of fact, when I was in the Army, I turned down a promotion when I was up at Aberdeen Proving Grounds, but if I would have gone over into a section that would have been almost classified as offense. I always worked in defense.
What's a defense against what? Because, of course, a lot of Christian identity people believe the government is an occupational government, and they call it the Zionist occupational government in the U.S. because they think Jews run the world. Now, you've heard that, I assume.
I've heard it espoused by a few people. For the most part, though, you find out that the people in the Christian groups they do Bible study, they do extensive archaeology, biblical archaeology, and it's more, if you want what you want to call Christian identity, it's more biblical archaeology.
Well, you think that you're part of the God's Promise people, don't you?
Basically, we are. The Caucasians are the true Israelites.
So you're the Jews, and the people who claim to be Jews are fakers. Right? Are they fakers because they stole the religion, or are they the spawn of the devil? Those are the two leading themes.
Basically, you had the northern 10 tribes were taken in captivity by the Assyrian army and then placed in the Caucasus Mountains, and you had the southern tribe of Judah and Benjamin, which was taken by Nebuchadnezzar, and then was finally destroyed by Titus and Vespasian and Titus in 70 A.D. So, again, it is a... with the birth of Christ, it became a dead religion. The temple was destroyed. There was no need for it. So, again, it is a dead issue.
So you're the sworn enemy of both Jews and Arabs.
No. Matter of fact, I was in Denver in August teaching in some Jewish synagogues, and if I'm such a enemy of Jews, I certainly would not have been teaching in a synagogue.
But you don't think that the synagogues represent Jews?
Again, I tell people, ask you the question, how many Jews caught a cold last year?
That makes no sense to me.
It makes every bit of sense in the world because, again, in order to be a Jew, you had to be a Judean, and Judea was destroyed in 70 A.D.
Let me go back to the issue at hand, which is bioterrorism. Larry Wayne Harris, do you think it's going to get worse in this country?
Most definitely.
And do you think it's coming from here?
No. It is definitely coming from overseas.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you both for being with us. Larry Wayne Harris, microbiologist, former member of the Aryan Nations. Chip Berlay, political research associates, writes about right-wing groups in this country. And we're going to continue our discussion of CNN's list of experts on terrorism. Just recently, and it could be any day of the week, this was Paula Zahn introducing Henry Kissinger.
I'm joined now by Dr. Henry Kissinger, the man that so many of us turn to try to unscramble some of the confusion that we are inundated with at the moment. Welcome. Good to have you with us
good
this morning.
Here.
Let's start off with the latest development. We know that Pakistan's top spy and a former...
Just one few second clip of CNN, Henry Kissinger, frequently on the networks talking about the issue of terrorism. I was traveling to Olympia, Washington, and an Ecuadorian man came up to me and said his brother had been killed by Ecuadorian authorities, was a journalist. And he said, did you know that September 11th was the day that Salvador Allende died in Chile when Pinochet rose to power? And I thought it was an interesting point just to remember what has happened all over the world as this terrible atrocity has taken place here at home, this act of terrorism against the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, where we're just blocks from more than 5,000 people who have been buried alive, incinerated. But to look at the people who are commenting on what should be done now, it's quite instructive. And we're joined by Peter Kornbluh. Peter Kornbluh is the author of the Iran-Contra chronology, the Iran-Contra scandal, a declassified history, and a leading scholar on U.S. policy in Central and Latin America. In fact, Peter, if I recall correctly, we were interviewing you on September 11th on Democracy Now! In Exile when just afterwards we heard about what was happening just blocks from us.
That is true. Well, you and I will always remember that day, as will so many of your listeners.
Well, you were talking that day about Rene Schneider in Chile, and you were talking about documents that had just been declassified that involved Henry Kissinger. And today we're talking about the list of terrorism experts on TV, maybe in the sense of it takes one to know one. But can you talk just very briefly about Henry Kissinger's involvement in the coup there?
Well, in the fall of 1970, Richard Nixon called Henry Kissinger and Richard Helms into his office and told them he wanted to see a military coup take place in Chile to prevent the democratically elected socialist president to be, Salvador Allende, from actually being inaugurated. And the documents are very clear that the responsibility for overseeing this project was Henry Kissinger's, and certainly Richard Helms's as well, and that the CIA did everything it could to foment upheaval and unrest in Chile in the fall of 1970 in order to create what CIA documents call a coup climate, a psychological climate in which the military would be more likely to move to block Allende's actual inauguration. And those operations included support for small terrorist groups. At one point, the CIA did approach a fanatic extreme right-winger, which is relative to all the right-wingers they were working with, who, in fact, was contemplating the assassination of Salvador Allende. They decided that he was too fanatical to be worthwhile to work with, and they didn't continue to work with him. But they did work with a group that was going to instigate this coup by kidnapping the Chilean commander-in-chief of the armed forces, General Rene Schneider. And this was supposed to set in motion a number of events that would bring the military to power. The documents are unclear the extent to which Kissinger was specifically briefed on that element of the plan, because they're heavily redacted. But it seems clear that his office was kept abreast of this coup plotting, and Schneider was not kidnapped. He was actually shot and died. Among the new CIA documents are ones where is a document where, after discussion with Richard Helms, the CIA sent a cable to its station in Santiago complimenting the station on a job well done after Schneider had been shot. And this is the truth and the darkness of our own history, which is at least worth remembering and understanding as we contemplate those who are speaking on terrorism today.
I wanted to ask you also about some other people we're seeing on a regular basis on CNN and the networks, like Oliver North and Richard Helms, but we also are joined by Veronica De Negri, who is a Chilean woman, lives in Washington, D.C. right now, victim of the coup, one of thousands. Very briefly, Veronica, we have had you on before. as we hear about the stories of those who were lost in the World Trade Center, it's easy to say 5,000, not even to say that, but we have to think about each individual life that was lost. I thought as I was walking around one night, because we stayed at the firehouse for days after so that we could continue to report, of the mothers of the disappeared in Argentina carrying those same pictures we see carried here of people looking for their loved ones. What happened to you under Pinochet coup that was supported by the U.S.?
Many different things happened to me. It's a long history of things that happened to me during after the coup d'etat in Chile. And as I want to refer to the fact that what you just mentioned, the mothers of Plaza de Mayo in Argentina, but we cannot just name one country. Don't forget that just in the Latin American countries, in early 90s, where over 90,000 disappears, over 90,000 people looking for their loved one. And as you say, it's not important just one person. The whole amount, what is important is how many people is affected, because it's not just the mother, the daughter, the whoever relative is, affect the whole life. And that's what happened to me with Chile. First of all, my compañero, the father of my son, was killed, was executed. After I was arrested, my family was, some of my relatives were arrested, or they went to exile. I came to United States, and which I'm very thankful for, in 1977, after being released from a concentration camp. And in 1986, my son, my oldest son, returned to Chile, and he was burned alive by military forces. And my life has been torn down too many times with these things. We have, through over 20 years, fighting for justice, and we don't have it. And when I see all these people, I don't watch CNN. First of all, I don't have cable. But when I had the chance before in other houses, it made me sick to see all these criminals, because in reality, to me, they are criminals. Even here, they are treated like heroes. They have so much responsibility over the pain of the people. I think the best way to do it is to do it to an international court. It's been very... we don't need to be killing and bombing people to take a crazy one from a part of the world. I think we have to be responsible, and part of the responsibility is not create more hate among us. Because one of the things I devote my life now is to stop the hatred and use our head and precious the life of every individual on the world. It's so amazing to me how we use God for everything. And the less things you really do with the action is respect God's voice for those that believe.
Veronica De Negri, I want to thank you very much for being with us, bringing your own life experience and wisdom to this conversation. Peter Kornbluh, you have well documented U.S. involvement in the coup in Chile, which killed thousands, including the family member's son of Veronica De Negri. You've also documented what happened in Nicaragua. Of course, you are the author of the Iran-Contra scandal, Declassified History. Your thoughts when you see Oliver North on television, if you could just give us a brief sketch, especially for people who weren't even born at the time who listened to Democracy Now! In Exile, of what he did in Nicaragua.
Well, there's a common expression now that one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. But in the case of Oliver North and some others that have become pundits on this issue, it's one man's freedom fighter is the same man's terrorist. In the name of promoting democracy and freedom in Nicaragua and Central America, Oliver North was involved in a number of operations which certainly were terrorist in their design and mission. One particular operation in the spring of 1985, he contracted with the authorization of superiors to pay $50,000 to a British mercenary to blow up an arms depot in downtown Managua. And this was totally for propaganda purposes, to show the U.S. Congress that the Contras were able to operate inside of the capital city of Nicaragua. This depot was blown up, and the fire from it spread immediately to a hospital next door and burned down the hospital. And therefore, for propaganda purposes, it was a lost cause. The Contras and all over North couldn't claim credit for this because they had burned down a hospital and killed civilians. In the quest to support the Contras illegally, Oliver North raised money that was paid to a Middle Eastern arms broker named Mansour al-Qassar. More than $1.5 million worth of weapons were bought from him. He was also the main arms dealers for a number of known terrorist groups in the Middle East at the time. And this was known to the U.S. government at the time, but it was a question of bedfellows and priorities. And those are the kinds of priorities that led us to support the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, simply to bleed the Soviet Union with total disregard to the real position of the Mujahideen.
One last person I wanted to get to, CIA Director Richard Helms, and we only have a minute, who we see, the former director, on television quite a lot.
CIA Director Helms' long tenure at the agency, in a director's role, that the CIA did engage in efforts to assassinate Fidel Castro, but perhaps more importantly, trained Cuban exiles in the art of terrorist activities, bombings, shooting bazookas. We worked very closely with the man who is now the most renowned Cuban exile terrorist, Luis Posada Carriles, who's currently in prison in Panama for trying to kill Fidel Castro and has been linked by multiple evidence to the bombings of tourist hotels in Cuba in the mid-1990s.
And if the Bush administration were serious about fighting terrorism today, what could they do right now? You write about this in The Nation in Chile.
Thing they could do is indict Augusto Pinochet for the car bombing of Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffitt here in Washington, D.C. in 1976.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Peter Kornbluh, the website where people can go to see all the documents, the National Security Archives?
NSArchive.org.
And I want to thank Veronica Denegri. And we're going to break, and when we come back, we're joined by Bangladeshi workers in our Firehouse studio to talk about what's happening in Bangladesh today, which has professed to be a strong ally of the war on terrorism, allying itself with the United States. We'll hear about the Disney factories and others in the country of Bangladesh. Stay with us.
Listen in to my stethoscope on a rope. Internal lullabies, human cries, thumps in silence, the language of violence. Algorithmic, cataclysmic, seismic, biorhythmic. You can make a life longer, but you can't save it. You can make a clone and then you try to enslave it. Stealing DNA samples from the unborn and then you coming after us because we sampled a James Brown horn. Scientists whose god is progress. A four-headed sheep is their latest project. The CIA running like they're Jones from Indiana, but they still won't talk about that Jones in Guyana. This ain't no cartoon. No one slips on bananas. Do you really think that that car killed Diana? Hell, I shot Ronald Reagan. I shot JFK. I slept with Marilyn. She sung me happy birthday. My, oh my God. In my mind, they got a slipping suicide singing. Oh my God. In my mind, they got a slipping genocide singing. Oh my God.
You are listening to Democracy Now! In Exile, the War and Peace Report. Michael Franti, as usual, here on our program, Free Speech Radio. I'm Amy Goodman. Bangladeshi Muslims continue to hold anti-U.S. protests in Dhaka, Bangladesh, urging the United Nations to stop, the United States to stop attacks on Afghanistan. At a demonstration Monday, police prevented protesters from marching to the UN mission in Dhaka, but allowed them to hand over a letter to the Secretary General, Kofi Annan, urging him to initiate immediate moves to try to halt U.S.-led air and ground attacks on Afghanistan. Bangladesh new government, an alliance between the Bangladesh Nationalist Party and the Islamic Fundamentalist Party, Jamaat-e-Islam, is under some pressure to pull out of the so-called coalition against terrorism. Today, we're going to take a look at the anti-sweatshop movement in Bangladesh. Anti-sweatshop watchdog groups say that in the aftermath of the events of September 11th attacks and the growing U.S. recession, conditions in the Bangladesh garment industry have worsened. They say in Bangladesh, one of the major Islamic export nations, between 700 and 1,000 garment factories have been shut down, throwing hundreds of thousands of young women workers into the streets without severance pay or savings. Bangladeshi garment workers have traveled to the U.S. to call on universities, many of whose caps, T-shirts, and sweatshirts are made in Bangladesh, to assure that pay and working conditions conform with Bangladeshi labor laws. And we're joined by two workers now from the plants, as well as an organizer in Bangladesh. We're joined by Nasreen Akhtar, a sewing operator, as well as Janu Akhtar, who worked for 10 years in the garment sector in Bangladesh. Sheikh Nasma is also with us, who is with the Bangladesh Center for Worker Solidarity. They'll be translated by Rafiqil Alam, who is the coordinator for the National Labor Committee's Bangladesh program. If you could each just briefly tell us where you work and the conditions.
আমি নাসরিন আক্তার আমি বাংলাদেশ থেকে আসছি আমার বয়স 21 বছর
আই এম নাসরিন আক্তার আই এম 22 ইয়ার্স ওল্ড আই এম ফ্রম বাংলাদেশ
আমি গার্মেন্টস শাহ মখদুম গার্মেন্টসে চাকরি করি
আই ওয়ার্ক ইন দা গার্মেন্টস শাহ মখদুম
আমাদের ওইখানে সকাল 8টা থেকে রাত 8টা অথবা 10টা পর্যন্ত ডিউটি হয়
আই স্টার্ট মাই ওয়ার্ক 8 ইন দা মর্নিং এন্ড ইট টিলস সামটাইমস 10 এট নাইট
আমাদের এখানে কাজের পরিবেশ অনেক নোংরা আমাদের এখানে খাওয়ার পরিবেশ নেই আমাদের এখানে
দ্য ফ্যাক্টরি আই ওয়ার্ক ইট ইজ ভেরি ডার্টি দ্যার ইজ নো এনাফ ভেন্টিলেশন এনাফ এয়ার এনাফ লাইট
আমাদের এখানে সুপারভাইজার মারপিট করে আমাদের ওভারটাইম করায় ঠিকমতো ওভারটাইম দেয় না
দ্যার ইজ নো ডাইনিং ফ্যাসিলিটিস নো ক্যাফেটেরিয়া উই হ্যাভ টু হ্যাভ ফুড অন ওপেন স্পেস ইন ফ্রন্ট অফ আওয়ার ফ্যাক্টরি ইন দ্য রোড
আমাদের যত বেতন দেওয়ার কথা আমাদের বাংলাদেশে লেবার লতে যা আছে সেটা আমরা ঠিকমতো পাই না
আওয়ার সুপারভাইজার্স দে ট্রিট আস ভেরি রাফলি দে সামটাইমস বিট আস পাঞ্চ আস শাউটেড অ্যাট আস এন্ড উই ক্যান নট গেট এনি আওয়ার প্রপার স্যালারি হুইচ স্টেট হ্যাজ বিন ডিক্লেয়ার্ড
আই ওয়ান্টেড টু ব্রিং চার্লি কার্নিগান ইনটু দ্য কনভারসেশন টু টেল আস অ্যাবাউট দ্য ফ্যাক্টরি দ্যাট ইউ ওয়ার্ক ইন ইউএস টার্মস হু ওনস ইট চার্লি কার্নিগান ইজ হেড অফ দ্য ন্যাশনাল লেবার কমিটি এন্ড হি ইজ জয়নিং আস অন দ্য টেলিফোন চার্লি ওয়েলকাম
ইয়েস গুড মর্নিং
ইটস গুড টু হ্যাভ ইউ উইথ আস
Thank you. Basically, these factories are owned, many of them by Bangladesh nationals, the very highest elite, ex-brigadier generals, ex-ministers of the government, opposition figures, and it's the perhaps the worst exploitation we've ever seen. The standard 12 to 14-hour shifts, 7-day work weeks, maybe 2 days off a month at most, physical punishment, like you heard, and starvation wages, 13 to 17 cents an hour. And so the trip here is really meant to target universities to keep their production in Bangladesh, not to cut and run at this minute. Hundreds of thousands of young women have been thrown out on the streets with nothing. I mean, no severance pay, no unemployment insurance, no safety net, no savings. We've exploited these young women for years, paying them starvation wages, working them 14 hours a day, up to 20 hours when shipments had to go out. They would work from 8 in the morning until 4 o'clock in the morning, then sleep on the factory floor and start all over again at 8 o'clock. If they tried to defend themselves, they were hit, punched, hit with sticks. If they tried to organize, they were fired and blacklisted. If they tried to get the maternity benefits, they'd be denied their maternity benefits. In other words, we've exploited these people for years, and now that there's a slowdown in the economy, we throw them out onto the street with nothing.
Okay. Charlie Kernigan with the National Labor Committee. The description we just heard from Nasreen Akhtar, the sewing operator, is actually at a Disney-owned factory. And Janu Akhtar, also working in the garment sector for university
for a factory that makes caps for universities. Can you tell us your story, Janu?
Good morning. I am Janu Akhtar. I am Bangladesh. আমি একটার গার্মেন্টসে চাকরি করি, সুইং অপারেটর। সেখানে সকাল 5টা বাজে ঘুম থেকে উঠে রান্না করে।
I am Janu Akhtar. I have been working in Actor Sports and I start my working at 8 in the morning.
সকাল 7টা বাজে ঘর থেকে বের হই, রাত 11টা বাজে ঘরে যাই।
And I have to work till 10 p.m. at night.
যা বেতন দেওয়ার কথা তা বেতন দেয় না।
The salary we are getting is very poor.
বিশুদ্ধ পানির ব্যবস্থা নেই, ডাক্তার নেই।
And in our factory, I drink filthy water, tap water that is not safe. There is no medical care system. If anyone falls sick, there is no system to take care, to be treated.
Union করার স্বীকৃতি দেয় না।
And in my factory, organized to union, it is strictly prohibited.
I'd also like to hear from the union organizer, Sheikh Nazma, with founder of the Bangladesh Center for Workers' Solidarity.
I am Sheikh Nazma, Bangladesh Center for Workers' Solidarity. আমি অর্গানাইজিং করি এবং গার্মেন্টস ওয়ার্কারদের ট্রেনিং দিই আমাদের সংগঠনে সচেতন বলে এবং আমিও
আই অ্যাম শেখ নাজমা ফ্রম বাংলাদেশ সেন্টার ফর ওয়ার্কার সলিডারিটি আই অর্গানাইজ দ্য গার্মেন্ট ওয়ার্কার্স টু ট্রেন দেম টু গিভ দেম লিগাল অ্যাওয়ারনেস সো দ্যাট দে হ্যাভ সাম নলেজ অ্যাবাউট দেয়ার লিগাল রাইটস
মানব অধিকারের অধিকার শেখায় নিজের অধিকার
আই ট্রেন দ্য গার্মেন্ট ওয়ার্কার অ্যাবাউট দ্য হিউম্যান রাইটস
আমাদের বাংলাদেশের লজ খুব ভালো আছে সেগুলো বাস্তবায়ন হয় না এই জন্য শ্রমিকদেরকে সচেতন করি
ইন মাই কান্ট্রি লেবার লজ আর ভেরি গুড বাট ইন নো ফ্যাক্টরি দিস লজ আর বিং ইমপ্লিমেন্টেড দের আর অলওয়েজ ভায়োলেশন অফ লজ
উই অনলি হ্যাভ এ মিনিট এন্ড আই ওয়ান্টেড টু আস্ক চার্লি কার্নিগান ফর পিপল ইন দিস কান্ট্রি টু আন্ডারস্ট্যান্ড দ্য কানেকশন টু দ্য ইউনিভার্সিটি স্টোরস ওয়্যার ইউ ক্যান গেট ইয়োর টি-শার্টস এন্ড ক্যাপস দ্যাট দিস ওয়ামেন হ্যাভ মেড হোয়াট পিপল ক্যান ডু
Well, they should know, first of all, that the women have paid a penny and a half for each cap they make for the universities, which then sell for $17, $18, $19. So what we're asking the students to do, and we're working with United Students Against Sweatshops and NYPERG in New York State, the students should go to their administrations and say, this is not the time to cut and run from Bangladesh. This is not the time to throw these young girls out onto the street. Let's keep our university production in Bangladesh. And let's work with these contractors and our licensees to clean up conditions so that the workers' rights are respected and that they're paid a fair wage. By the way, the workers say that they a living or subsistence level wage for them to climb out of misery and into poverty would be 34 cents an hour.
I know that women are going across the country to speak about these issues. Where can people call to find out if they'll be coming to their communities?
Well, obviously they could call our number at the National Labor Committee office at 212-242-3002, or they can go to the website where the schedule is posted, and that's www.nlcnet.org.
I want to thank you all very much for being with us. It's only the beginning of this discussion. That does it for today's program. And Democracy Now! in Exile is produced by Chris Abrams, Brad Simpson, and Miranda Kennedy. Anthony Sloan is our technical director. Errol Maitland at the helm at WBIX.org, where you can hear us, as well as at webactive.com. Special thanks to Amy Pomerlo at KPFA, all of KPFA, KFCF, and all of our Pacifica affiliates. We are Pacifica. Downtown Community Television is where we're based, in exile from the embattled studios of WBAI, from the studios of the Band and the Fire, the studios of our listeners. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.
Oh my God. In my mind, I got a sleeping genocide singing. Oh my God. In my mind, I got a sleeping suicide singing. Oh my God. Oh my God. Slam, bam, I come on the scene, but like gasoline, you can tell I'm in the tank, like money in the bank. I smell appealing, but I'm toxic, can send you reeling without an inkling. Keep you thinking, cause you gave cash to the feds, left your school district for dead. You up in the head, but still they saying nothing's wrong. Selling fire water by outlawing the bong. Still believing the system is working, while half of my people are still out of working. Anonymous notes left in the pockets.